Surprise, I'm having an affair with Chris Farley. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Happy Thanksgiving 2006, because that's where we're going back to for our very special Thanksgiving episode of The Pilot Project. This is the show where we like to dress up as superheroes in the worst costumes of all time and fight crimes against television.
Well, really, this was a bad show to pick if we like to dress up in costumes, because this is a no-tight zone.
Although, we do have some tights in the form of Oliver Queen, who is the worst Oliver Queen I think I've ever seen. Having rewatched this show, we are talking about Smallville. This, and while it is not the pilot episode, we decided we're going to take on an episode from 2006, from season 6, called Rage. And this was their Thanksgiving episode. And that man you heard there, he is the Lionel Luthor to my Lex Luthor. And he is the man with all the hair. Well, I am not. Is Dirty, Dirty Dustin.
Well, the man with all the 90s hair. I mean, it's very 90s, even though this is 2006.
Your hair is very 90s. You're absolutely right.
That is true. You've
got a long, flowing mullet. And our guest this week, she's a villain of the week. Maybe a slightly evil doctor. We're not really sure. And we really don't know what she's doing here, but it's the return of Esther D.
Evil Esther, that's me.
Evil Esther, all EE. Keeping in the fine DC tradition of starting the first and last name with the same consonant or vowel. We got Lana Lang, Lois Lane, Clark Kent, it's just the same sound starting the first and last name, which is classic in comics to keep the trend up, keep the tradition up. Now, normally, I think last year we did the Jason Bateman Thanksgiving movie, or was it the year before that?
I think it was last year. Yeah. We normally do that at Thanksgiving and at Christmas.
Yeah. And we decided, honestly, I've been so busy lately, I don't really have time to watch an entire TV movie from the 80s. So we decided to do something a little shorter.
Well, plus, beyond that, nobody really wanted to.
There's that also. There's the lack of caring factor about that. So, yeah, so we're here. We're taking on Smallville. This is a show that Dustin and I used to be big fans of. I mean,
oh, yeah, big time.
Although we both fell off, I don't know, somewhere around season 7 or 8, probably.
It was shortly after this year, I think. And this might have been the last season we even watched. At least me. I don't know how long you hung on, but I think this was it for me.
Was this the same season where Lana developed magic witch powers, or was that previous season? Do you remember that?
I remember that happening, but I don't remember what season it was.
That notoriously bad season? That was the season that made me almost give up on the show, although I did end up giving up on it later.
Sure.
And boy, after rewatching season 6, episode 7, I think it was, Rage, I was justified in giving up on this show.
Sure.
And why I didn't give up on it earlier, I'm not really sure. I don't remember this episode at all, though. I'll be honest with you. I know I watched it past this, but I don't recall this episode at all.
Yeah, I remember watching End of the Green Arrow years, which I don't know how long he was on, if it was the rest of the series or a couple years or what. But I do remember him joining. But yeah, like you, I don't remember this at all. I think you and I, we had an ongoing thing back then that we always talked about the fact that this show, well, for one, this was a show that actually had something to do with superheroes that nothing else was really around at the time. So that drew you to it. And then also the season finales and the season premieres tended to be pretty good. Like the season premiere of this one was, I know from the intro that this is the one where Zod takes over Lex's body and they have an epic fight, which with a lot of flying, by the way, which is supposed to be no flight, but they had it. And, you know, like those were kind of fun at the time, but then it would go into the mundane repetitive BS as you went into the 22 episodes of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. As we, it was always said, these shows, even Arrow today and Supergirl, they could all benefit from being 10, 11 episodes at most.
Oh,
for sure. Esther, what was your experience with Smallville prior to watching this episode?
Honestly, I was not a Smallville fan, so I didn't have much experience. I hate to disappoint you with that, but I was very pleased to know that Allison Mack was in this episode because yes, I'm sure we'll get around to discussing about that.
We never heard from her again. Right. We may never hear from her again hereafter. Pretty soon.
That's true.
Yeah, so do you watch any of the modern day superhero stuff? Are you a superhero fan? I don't really know your
again, I hate to disappoint you. You know, it's not really my type, but every now and then I dip my toe in it. And this was actually not as bad as I thought it would be. It was actually quite tolerable. maybe not the best episode of the show, But it was a lot more pleasant to watch, and you know, it was not that bad actually. So I was pleased.
Yeah, I actually texted Marcus that. I said, you know, the string of really, really terrible episodes we picked recently, this was better than a lot of them have been. Not that that's saying a lot, but it is actually a little bit better than they've been.
Yeah, do you think, Dustin, do you think the Birds of Prey was better than this or worse?
I think Birds of Prey was worse, actually. This wasn't good, but there is at least on par. I don't know. That's kind of a 1A, 1B thing.
Yeah.
They're very similar because that was the CW of the era, or WB or whatever it was at the time of the era. But
this was actually, when this came out, this was the first year that the CW was in existence.
Oh, okay.
So this was the year that they merged from UPN and WB Network to become CW.
Gotcha.
Which I think that, does that mean that Buffy was still in the air? I think I can't remember when Buffy ended, but that would have been maybe at least Angel was still in the air. So it was that era of early low budget sci-fi. Not that they've changed much, but.
Right, exactly.
I will say the special effects have at least gotten better, but special effects have also gotten cheaper. So
true. Good point.
Yeah.
So this episode aired on November 9th, 2006. The show in total, which can't believe this, had a total episode run of 217 episodes. It was created by Alfred Goh, who also did Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire one, that is. I'm Number 4, The Mummy. Number 3, wasn't that Scorpion King one with The Rock?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
And it was also co-created by Miles Millar, who did Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire one, I'm Number 4, and The Mummy 3. These guys are frequent writing partners. They are joined at the writing hip.
It's unfortunate not the Algo from 1989 Batman, which we used to, before the internet was really popular and we really had frequent access. I was like, is that the same guy? Like, no, it's not.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was not. Yeah. These guys, I think their most recent thing was Into the Badlands on AMC, which only ran 3 seasons and I don't think ever got a proper wrap up. Hmm. But I've watched 1 or 2 episodes of that and it just feels like, it feels like a Goh and Millar show for sure. It's just set it's basically The Walking Dead, but what if The Walking Dead had kung fu people in it and samurais and stuff?
Mm, okay.
So an apocalyptic future where everything's falling apart and certain people control certain regions. It's basically The Walking Dead with kung fu.
Perfect.
Yeah. Not quite the wholly original idea, but it's minorly entertaining. I'll just put it that way. All right, this one.
That's a great pitch.
It's a rave review.
Yeah.
Nearly tolerable, says Mark.
Yeah. A strong meh. This was written by Todd Slavkin, who did Shadowhunters, Defiance, No Ordinary Family, which I think that was the one had Michael Chiklis, right? It was like a superhero Fantastic Four ripoff, right?
Suburban Family or something, I think, if I remember right, yeah.
And Darren Swimmer, who was also basically did the exact same 3 projects. Directed by Whitney Rancic. I'm guessing she hasn't done anything in her life. And because she didn't have any credits. And produced by Joe Davola. You brought up 1987 game show Remote Control that I think had Adam Sandler on it. I think he was like the yuck monkey of that show. Yeah, it was an MTV show.
Okay.
I think that's where he got his start.
I don't remember it at all.
I think that's right. On MTV. Yeah. The official description of Smallville as a whole, a young sort of Clark Kent struggles to find his place in the world as he learns to harness his alien powers for good and deals with the typical troubles of teenage life in Smallville, Kansas. Which, as we always noted at the end of every episode, was you could go up into the barn, the hayloft of the barn, you could see Metropolis just a stone's throw away.
Exactly, yeah.
And somehow Metropolis had a waterfront, even though that's in Kansas.
It was like 6 hours away, but you could get on a water tower and just see that big city in the distance.
Yep. And they had a waterfront. Yep.
Yep.
All right. As we always like to do, to find some IMDb or Amazon user reviews of people who loved and hated the show. In this case, 5 out of 5 stars from Calamity Carol. The headline is a good story about Superman's early years, reviewed in 2020 this year. This says, bought this to complete my series. Love science fiction, can be a bit violent, but at least there is no bad language.
This is coming. Keep it pure.
Calamity Carol from the UK, where cunt is an affectionate term in that country. So real sensitive about the bad language over there. This one from Sarah Jade also gives it 5 out of 5 stars, reviewed in 2010. 2010. Yeah. Said Tom Welling said in a Comic-Con interview that he basically saw a different series when when season six began, which he saw as a positive. I can see what he means. This is when life became a bit darker and harder and made the series more interesting. This is when he really loses his friendship with Lex and he's completely separated from Lana, and where he begins to forge an actual relationship or friendship with Lois. Chloe becomes a psychic in the season, which she always was.
I was going to say, becomes?
Yeah. I love the episode Promise, the episode called Promise, where Lana and Lex get married. How heartbreaking was that? But it made for a great episode. I also love that episode Hydro, where Lois and Clark first kiss, and you can see an awareness in Clark for Lois that he had never realized was there before. They don't explore this storyline other than making Lois and Clark actual friends in the season. It's still contentious and witty banter going back and forth, but they do become friends little by little. Is an enjoyable season, more so than I think the next one.
Witty banter?
Witty.
It's banter for sure.
That is a strong descriptor.
Witty.
Yeah. Witty, yeah. All right, and let's see. I think this is the last one. This is 2 out of 5 stars from Cinnamon. Reviewed in July of 2018.
Smallville, I'm going to guess that's not their name on their birth certificate.
Yeah. Smallville may never recover is the headline. After waiting a year, I was finally able to buy season 6 at a lower price than all the other sellers had been selling it at. One annoying thing is that the patching is scarred and bent up for a new item. Of course, I have always liked Smallville, but the horror of having to watch Kristen Kreuk and Allison Mack on my TV screen is going to gross me out due to the recent news about their involvement in a sex cult. It really makes me sick that these two girls did not have sense enough to run, in all capital letters. I hope both of them go to jail along with that filth, not even a man, they were tied up with.
In fairness, Kirk did run, but anyway.
That's what she says.
Didn't do what Allison Mack did, and we'll get into that later. But
oh yeah, she didn't. She didn't have a sex cult that branded people.
Well, and that was AKA Cinnamon who said that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just checking. Whatever you say, Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
The cast of the show: Tom Welling, who you may know from Abercrombie and Fitch modeling ads and that show about cheerleaders and stuff. He plays Clark Kent.
Before this, that would be definitely it. But
I think he was actually in that show Luther that is now on Netflix. It got an extra season from Netflix. I think he's in that show, or he was at one point, playing the Cain of Cain and Abel fame.
Ah, okay. Oh.
And Michael Rosenbaum, who you probably know from Smallville and Sorority Boys, that... that rip-roaring of a movie. Played Lex Luthor, although I still contend he is one of the better Lex Luthors to ever been put to screen. Sure. John Glover, I could never stand Gene Hackman's version of Lex Luthor. It was just too silly for me. Even as a kid, I never liked that Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
John Glover plays his dad, Lionel Luthor. Kristen Kreuk plays Lana Lang. Allison Mack, who you probably know from a sex cult, played Chloe Sullivan. Annette O'Toole, who you probably know from Superman 3. Where she played Lana Lang. She is Martha Kent in this one. And Erica Durance, who I don't really even know what else she's been in. She plays Lois Lane.
She was in Supergirl later.
That's right. She did play... what did she play? Oh, she was so, the... Was she the mom?
Maybe so, yeah. Somebody from her planet, yeah.
I think she was Kara's mom.
Yeah.
In that one. Yeah. I think you're right. All right, this episode is entirely centered around... It's basically a Nancy Reagan... it's a DARE commercial. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's basically... it's a Reagan-era politics drug awareness commercial.
Yes.
The whole thing centers around this. And really, it feels like an episode that if you're going to suddenly turn to the left and make Oliver Queen a drug addict, it feels like something that should have been building up to this point. Like, not the suddenly using drugs, and by the episode... He has no ill effects from coming down from these drugs.
Which, you know, obviously we didn't watch all the episodes up to this again. I guess we did at the time. But it does imply that this was just out of the blue recently.
Yeah.
Like you said, like it's not like it's been a thing that's building all season and it came to a head around Thanksgiving.
And everyone is so willing to suddenly believe that he's a drug addict. Despite he's had evident behavior, the typical superhero behavior of disappearing, right? But everybody, especially Lois, his girlfriend, is so willing to believe that he has turned into a drug addict at the drop of a needle, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like, it's just everybody's just like, of course, now it all makes sense. He's a drug addict. an established relationship with this guy, how would you just not question things and suddenly bring things up like that? It makes zero sense.
I agree.
But this whole thing starts with Lois and Oliver basically
having some sexy time and some kind of date in his loft. Yeah.
Yeah. His loft. They've had some sexy time. She says, "Hold on, I've got something. I've got a surprise, sexy surprise for you," basically. At which point he hears, keep in mind, he's on like the 40th floor of a clock tower.
Right.
He had,
which is made very clear by the gigantic ass clock in the middle of his living room.
Which, if you pay attention throughout, the clock on the inside never changes time, but the clock on the inside, on the outside, does in the establishing shots. It's always like 12:55 on the inside clock, but it's always changing time on the outside.
Well, they only show half of it, so you have to have the hands up there to actually show that it's a clock.
Yeah, exactly. But they could have like taken the time to maybe change the hands once in a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that hard of a prop to design to make
that's true. Yes.
Yeah, but he's got this giant loft, and this is the problem that plagued the series overall. And this is just an annoying from like an annoying. I'm no set decorator, but I would venture to say that I could probably design a set that had more than one room in it.
Yeah.
Every major set piece outside of the Clark Kent farm home was entirely composed of one room. This was the same as the Luther Mansion. It was the Oliver loft. I remember it seemed like, oh yeah, Lois's apartment was just one room. It was a kitchen and a bed, basically. Everything is a giant efficiency in this world.
Open concept everywhere.
Concept everywhere.
Even if it's a mansion, it's an open concept of the entire mansion.
Yes.
Right. Even the billionaire lives in an efficiency. Yeah,
exactly. His whole mansion is an efficiency. Yes. I mean, everything that was in this Oliver loft. I mean, there's stuff. It is a set decorating nightmare. It's like an explosion of sets that they found abandoned in a back lot, and they thought this will look good if we just mash it together in one set piece. Because there are like 50 shelves of Encyclopedia Britannicas. There's the giant clock. There is a weird like green chair in the middle of nothing. There's a weight bench in the middle of nothing. There's an antique desk that he writes at. There is a bed. I think there's a giant girder shooting through one of the walls. There's an entire wall of metal discs.
And that era of the CW shows, much like the Birds of Prey episode, it has that color palette of being like just slightly Batman Forever-y, that it's like a little hyper realistic, a little neon-y looking or something. It's just not very realistic looking, and they definitely carry that on, including into Oliver's Arrow suit that has to have the neon green outline on the hood, which is real great for dark areas.
Well, speaking of dark areas, nobody likes to use any light on these sets, because if you notice, like even when they're in the hospital, when Lana is getting her examined by a doctor, that doctor doesn't have any lights on in his office room except for the X-ray machine.
True. Yeah.
That's the only light on in an examination.
It looked pretty creepy. It kind of looked like when the Joker's getting worked on in the 89 Batman and putting his face back together in like some back alley. Yeah. Like, why is she here with just this one tiny light?
And you are so right about that being the whole CW shows in their entirety, practically. Like, you knew as soon as you were changing channels, you knew when you got to that channel what it was going to look like, no matter what was on. It all looks like that industrial with a splash of weird bright color now and then.
Yeah. It's weird. It is weird how channels have their own like visual patina, because even like you can instantly tell a CBS drama from any other show on any other network.
It has that little glow look to it, like Vaseline's on the lens or something.
Yes, yeah, soft glow on every drama. It's like they're all shot. They're probably shot with, I don't know, the exact same camera. Or the exact same lenses or something that provides this just consistent look. And the CW was lack of lighting, giant efficiency apartments, and really horrible acting.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
I still think Michael Rosenbaum is, I mean, not that he really displayed it during this episode, because he didn't have that much to work with us in the episode, but I still consider he is one of the better actors to have graced, especially this show.
Yeah, John Glover was good too, usually on the show.
Although he comes off, he does creep really well.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because, I don't know John Glover. Is he creepy in real life, or is he does he just play the creep really well?
I think he is. We'll see in the fun facts. He's a little creepy in real life. Okay. But anyway.
That hair is doing him no favors. That explosion of hair.
I don't know if you could creep that well as an actor if you're not creepy in real life, honestly.
True.
I don't know.
Yeah, he seems like someone is, he just probably reeks of a bad aftershave. Oh, yeah. He uses a splash of aftershave as cologne. He's got that wild mane of hair that, I mean, I would love to have his hairline, of course, but I don't know. Even if I did, I would have that giant explosion of hair. Not that I'm not jealous in some ways, but...
It's the Mozart look, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
If your hair all of a sudden like came back, you might grow it out 90s style. You don't
That's
know.
True. I might. You know, they say all fashion comes back again, so there's every chance that we're on the precipice. It is 2020 also.
True.
There's every chance we're on the precipice of rat tails making a comeback in this world.
And really just, poofy suits, you know, with like 50,000 pleats. And
yes. Yeah. Pleats and rat tails are going to make a comeback this year because it's 2020 and that's how horrible things are going to get.
Exactly.
Once we got away from pleats as a culture and we look back, it's like, how are we not embarrassed by ourselves in pleated pants?
It's like a really bulgy crotch area. Who doesn't like it? It's very flattering.
Even on Diane Keaton. I mean, Diane Keaton has a habit of dressing more androgynously, and she'll wear some giant pants on you. Even true. Her, she can't make pleats look good.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, and she's, I would say for someone who dresses sort of androgynously, she's kind of fashion forward, right? But she can't even make pleats look good. So we need to write off pleats as a society, and let's never go back. Not to rat tails either, unless we're, you know, making fun of a certain sect of people. Let's not bring the rat tail back.
Even, sounds good to me.
Even in 2020. So in theory, this is the Thanksgiving episode. I don't think we get a lot of giving of thanks ever in this episode. Yeah,
you're right. I just wanted to say we went through this whole thing with Oliver and him attacking someone or trying to stop an attack in the street, and then he gets shot.
Yeah,
and then it looks like he might be dead. And then we cut to the intro that is absolutely no different than any other intro, but I feel like it's worth at least playing.
I still say that song, especially for a theme song on a drama, that song is a banger. That's still a really good,
It's a perfect intro song for the show, yes. Actually, I think.
It's a great pop song, and it's by Remy Zero, who, if I remember right, broke up shortly after this
I think they did.
That album went big because of Smallville. Yep. I could be wrong on that, but I think that's true.
I think that's true, too.
I think that's a true fact. But it's a great theme song. And to me, that I know we talk about it all the time, but a great theme song really makes just about any show better. It sets the scene. It opens your heart with good music to a shitty show. it gives a slightly better shine to a shitty show.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
And just the theme of the actual song fits perfectly for what happens in the episodes. And I don't know. Yeah, it was a really good choice. It's one of the better things he did.
Yeah.
Agreed. I tried to think in my mind, is this really a good song? But yes, it is absolutely a great, perfect fit song for that show and gives it a shine, like you said. Couldn't agree more.
And I will listen to this song just by as a song once in a while on my iPod. I break out my old iPod 3 and I'll listen to this song. I mean, it is really just a good song by itself, but it definitely fits the show to a T. And that's one thing I think Arrow was missing. I think Supergirl is missing. Maybe not Arrow. Maybe get away with not having a theme song because it's a little darker. But Supergirl should have had a theme song. I mean, I think that was the downside of Lost, was just going to the womp. Like, they really kind of set a new era of ushering out the theme song, and I really missed the theme song era.
Yeah, this was near the end of that, I would think, really, because most shows don't do it at all anymore, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, HBO has been really good about putting in theme songs in their shows to the point where sometimes it's like, all right, guys, like let's cut it down by like a minute and a half. We don't need a 2-minute theme song, but at least they're being consistent. Like the Nexium documentary, I thought, great, they put a theme song, but it was way too long for like I.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I think about HBO is their theme songs are too long, but whatever.
True.
But I appreciate the fact that they're still trying to keep that art alive.
Yep.
It gives you time for any type of bathroom break.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, true. Or if you want to put a theme song in, fine, give me a skip intro button once in a while.
Right, that too. Yeah,
really.
I mean, like Star Trek Discovery, again, have a theme song. I like it a lot. But I've heard it enough times now. I'm okay with hitting the skip intro once in a while.
Exactly.
CBS All Access does not have that. I'm not happy about that.
No.
I do want to go back to the intro real quick. I know we spent like 30 minutes on a 2-minute scene, but I do want to go back to Lois's surprise. First of all, Oliver Queen as Arrow only carries 3 arrows in his quiver. I don't know if you noticed that. Modern day Arrow carries probably 40 to 50 arrows. Oliver Queen in this era carries 3 plus a tiny little hand crossbow.
Well, plus modern day Arrow has like 50 types of arrows and everything too. It's not just the 3 standard arrows.
Well, and that does follow DC Comics, right? He has all these trick arrows. Like,
exactly.
It got so bad at one point he had a boxing glove arrow that it would shoot a boxing glove in DC Comics. Yeah, in the it's probably the mid 80s, I think.
Well, that's stupid.
He was more of a he's like Iron Man. You know, back in the 80s, he was kind of a silly character, more of a punchline type character in a lot of ways. At one point, he was this anti-fascist type of hero character, like fighting against the man. And at some point, he became more of a jokey character. And so did Batman for a little while in the silly 80s. And then, yeah, he literally had a boxing glove arrow, which I think they referenced in one season of Arrow, but I could be wrong. But yeah, this Oliver Queen, he only carries 3 arrows, a tiny crossbow. He carries a full bow, but very rarely uses it.
Right. And he always uses the tiny one.
Uses the tiny one, yeah. And then Lois's sexy surprise for Oliver, her surprise was to come back in a giant Chris Farley white button-down shirt.
Yeah, that's like, what I was thinking. Whose shirt is that? It's definitely not his.
It is not Oliver Queen's shirt. Surprise, I'm having an affair with Chris Farley. I think it's a sexy surprise.
Yeah, she's wearing a man's shirt, dress shirt, but it is way oversized. It is certainly not his size. Like you said, it's more like Chris Farley's size. And that was my first thought when I saw it. I was like, wait, that's not his shirt.
Yes, it's huge. It's a tank.
You know, Rip Justin Hartley's wearing, you know, athletic cut. He's not wearing anything like that.
Well, and I think in every episode of this show and in This Is Us, he has to have his shirt off at least once per episode. I think it's contractually obligated by him. I don't think it's an org demand. Which, look, if you got pecs like that and abs, why not show it off, of course? But I don't blame you. But that is not Justin Hartley's shirt. I think the secret was I've got a cuck in the corner that's going to be watching us tonight as we make love on this antique desk next to this bookshelf of Encyclopedia Britannica's.
The half clock.
Yeah. And the half clock that never changes time. And then the other thing is, the time it took him to suit up, somebody would have murdered 40 floors down, which again, we mentioned, he's somehow 40 floors up on a clock tower.
Right.
He can hear a mugging going down on the street below. He takes the time, about 10 minutes, to change into his Arrow gear and go down and get shot. Like a normal crime is not going to wait on you to change. That's one thing they could have sped up is maybe he just throws on a hoodie and goes down with a bow. Like that would have been more believable than walking into the Arrow cave and suiting up.
Yeah. His hood and his Oakleys and just gone down there.
Yes. Which wearing Oakleys at night,
I know.
Do you not have a hard enough time seeing with a hood on that you're going to add sunglasses to that mix?
I know.
Yeah, makes no sense.
I mean, I wasn't a fan of the paint or whatever they did in the new one, but it was better than this for sure.
Yeah, at least you'd have peripheral vision that way and normal eyesight.
Exactly.
That is the one thing I never understood about Arrow in either incarnation is why you would wear a hood, because I know just from walking around wearing a hoodie in cold weather, you lose a lot of your peripheral vision.
Exactly.
Just twisting, you have to continually twist to the left and right.
That seems pretty stupid.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Clark, the whole setup for this episode is Oliver Queen gets shot, and he ends up turning to this drug that we've never heard of in this show. It just shows up that he has been commissioning some doctor to make a drug that will miraculously heal people. And he's had a sample, and apparently he's been using this every time he gets hurt.
Yep.
Because we should say he gets shot by this mugger, which I will say he just stares – he stands there and just stares at the gun and doesn't try to take any defensive action to avoid getting shot by a gun. Well, right. When this lady's getting mugged. So he gets shot, uses this drug, and he's back to normal. Lois drops his bomb. They're back at the Kent farm in Smallville. Lois drops his bomb, comes in. She's living with the Kents at this period. And she drops his bomb. The green arrow was shot. And she doesn't know, Oliver Queen's actually Arrow.
Right.
She doesn't know that Clark has powers.
Right.
But Clark knows who Oliver Queen is and the fact that he's Arrow.
I think, they know each other, don't they? Because
yeah, they know each other. Yeah. But he goes to check on Oliver, and we get in this whole storyline about using this drug that in the early seasons of Smallville would have been kryptonite-powered medicine.
True.
Thankfully, we didn't have that.
At least I got a little better there.
Yeah. not so everything is kryptonite-powered.
Yeah.
And Oliver's getting addicted to this drug, and I guess it's making him mad. He's like, he's got a light, he throws a few tantrums. Let's not get into rage. He's not really rageful. Right. He's a little angry.
He's a little angry.
I think really maybe he's just taking testosterone injections and it's just like boosting up his T and making him a little teenage angry.
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't really that rageful.
Well, he shows just a little bit. Yeah, little anger burst. And when Oliver talks to the doctor about it, she said that that's one of her reasons for wanting to stop the development of that drug because it causes lapse in judgment and anger bursts. She said that that's one of the reasons why she doesn't want to create that drug anymore.
Which I didn't understand her because on one hand, she's wanting to stop these trials because it's unsafe. But on the other hand, she's in the back alley injecting felons at a halfway house with this drug over and over again to experiment on them.
Wasn't that something that Lex was involved in? Because he came in the picture at some point. Wasn't it the same doctor he was working with? I could have sworn.
I thought it was the same doctor, the one that gets killed by whoever killed her, which you don't ever really come to a conclusion on. I took it to mean that she on one side is stopping it, but at the same time, she's been injecting felons with these drugs. Is it not the same doctor? I watched this episode twice, and that's what I thought
both
times.
It's the same doctor that both billionaires are working with, to my understanding.
Right. So, seems like she would have been the villain of the piece.
Yeah. Well, at least half the piece.
She was. She said that she had been doing it for greedy reasons, and I guess she had a coming of conscience. And
okay.
I don't know. She explained it in less than a sentence. So, you either had to be listening super sharply or you missed it. And I think 99% of America probably missed it when they watched it, too.
I missed it twice. So, yeah, it was completely lost on me. I didn't understand her intentions at all. I didn't understand her scheme. This thing is, I guess, the whole plot is Oliver's been commissioning the doctor to make this drug, and somehow Lex is his rival from high school because, of course, everybody knew all the world's billionaires come from Smallville.
Exactly.
And Lex is somehow trying to subvert her company or subvert these drugs away from Queen Industries, I guess. I didn't really understand that plot. He's wanting to use the drug for reasons, and somehow she ends up murdered.
Yes.
And Clark thinks it's her. I'm sorry, that thinks that Oliver murdered her.
Right.
But they don't really, and then they allude to the maybe it was Lex, but they don't ever really come to a conclusion about who murdered her. I guess we're just supposed to assume it was Lex.
I only watched it once, but I don't remember a conclusion to that.
Yeah, I watched it twice, didn't track either time. It wasn't really clear about who murdered her in the end.
Yeah.
I think we're just supposed to assume, but it doesn't seem like Lex would stoop to murder that easily based on the character from what we previously, that he wouldn't do it, but for such a petty reason of not going to experiment on inmates.
Right.
Maybe you would have a hired gun to do it, but not Lex himself.
Yeah, I would think.
I think we just had to assume that it was Lex. And he it was never stated for sure.
Yeah. So they have a little tete-a-tete when Oliver shows up to Lex's office. He's fully in the throes of this rage drug, and they have one of the dumbest scenes I've ever seen in TV history when Oliver's holding his little tiny hand crossbow and Lex is holding a gun because Oliver wants him to sign over his billion, wants Lex to sign over his billions into charity.
Yeah.
And Lex pulls a gun on him. Oliver pulls his little tiny hand crossbow and they're like, I guess we're going to see which one's faster, a bullet or an arrow. And so they both fire at the same time.
Yeah.
And somehow a bullet and an arrow are moving at the exact same speed and they end up shooting each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fun fact here about bullets versus arrows is compound bows, which are the big, large recurve bows, they have an average maximum speed of 300 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Max. Bullets start at a minimum of 1,200 miles per hour.
Yeah, but he was using the hand bow, so that's probably fast.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. Yeah, I'm sure it has that much more firing power than a recurve bow. Bow.
That was a very annoyingly stupid scene. I mean, if I was a child, I would enjoy it, but it was so annoying.
It was aggressively stupid.
Yes,
aggressively stupid.
I mean, can we just talk for a sec, just a little bit more about that scene? Because it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was like a peak moment of ridiculousness in that episode. When, you know, they cock up their weapons, but then instead of just going ahead and shooting either one of their weapons, they very slowly, both of them, like just stand there and hold it and point it towards each other. And then very slowly, like kind of slowly pull back the trigger. Both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
Slowly. And it's like, come on, guys. Just shoot your darn weapon. Come on.
Yeah, they had to zoom in on the slow motion trigger action.
Well, and then we get the everybody being obsessed with bullet time after The Matrix in 99. Once bullet time became cheaper, or at least a simulated bullet time type effect, we of course had to see the arrow and the bullet flying slowly, slowly, slowly towards another paths.
Yeah.
And then hit each other at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They crossed paths, and like you said, it shows them in motion sliding past each other, and it shows them moving at the same speed as each other.
Yes. Yep. I mean, fine. I can buy the one person getting shot with an arrow and another person getting shot at a bullet. Fine. I can buy that. But the stupidity of them crossing at the exact same speed, at the exact same time, and crossing the halfway mark at the exact same time is just aggressively, aggressively stupid.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not that smart, but I'm smarter than that.
Right. Exactly.
That scene just made me angry. Just so angry. I didn't know. So was the other side effect of this drug aggressive sweating? Because that was the other thing with Justin Hartley was he sweaty prior to the drug?
I think the drug increased the sweat. I think that's supposed to be part of the amped up. When someone's amped up, they're super sweaty. I think that's the effect.
Boy, I must be rage filled all the time then, because I sweat a lot.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of are. Yeah.
No wonder people in Texas are so mad all the time. It's because they're sweaty. Or is the sweaty the sign of our rage?
Exactly. That's what it is.
The B, C, D, E, and F plots in the show in this episode are Lana Lang is pregnant, ostensibly by Lex's, you know, sperm sack, I think, because they're together in this episode. I don't remember them being together at all.
Yeah, apparently. I was curious about that, and I guess, I don't know, Clark and her had some falling out, and Lex was always, I remember in the early seasons, Lex always had a thing for Lana, but I guess they ended up, getting together and getting married in this season.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. I did not recall that at all. That made you think, oh, maybe she's got cancer or she's suffering from a kryptonite disease. But no, she's just pregnant.
Yeah, and before we move on to the other plots, I just want to play a little bit of dialogue just for anybody that hasn't actually watched this episode. This is when Clark goes and talks to Lois, and he's very concerned about just what the drug user Oliver is. And it just shows some of Tom Welling's acting chops, I guess.
Wow. Since when did you turn the apartment into a florist shop?
They're from Oliver.
Wait a second. The guy smothers you with flowers and you forget everything he's done?
Please, I'm not that gullible. The whole botanical overkill is just a lame attempt to beg forgiveness.
Well, if he shows up in person to beg for forgiveness, don't answer the door. Lois, I went to talk to him at his apartment.
You didn't. What were you thinking?
I was looking out for you.
I have 20/20 vision, Smallville. I look out for myself.
When I was in his apartment, I found a needle in a syringe. Unless her doctor prescribed, I think Oliver's doing drugs.
This actually explains a lot. All those times he disappeared. I should have known. He said that Thanksgiving was a hard time of year. Made him think about his parents.
Lois, I think you might want to keep your distance.
He has a substance abuse problem, not leprosy. And I am not going to abandon him when he needs me the most.
He's not himself right now. And based on his behavior, I don't think he's someone you want to be around.
Well, see, that's the difference between you and me, Clark. I don't desert people when they need help.
I mean, that scene betrays so much. Like, there's 3 points here. One, as we mentioned, everybody just taking a left turn on Oliver, despite the fact you've seen his actions in prior episodes, right? Throughout the story. Doesn't seem like a drug user, but everybody just ready to abandon him at the drop of the hat, including Lois herself. I mean, even though she says she's not abandoning him, she also wrote him off as being a drug user.
Yeah, she's like, oh, well, that explains it.
Yeah, there's no denial at all.
Yeah, there's no
second.
Yes, there's no.
There's not. No, wait, no.
There's no suspicion at all that
no
maybe that could be wrong.
No denial, no nothing. She immediately.
I found a syringe. Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That explains it.
Lois, based on the way he's acting, I would.
Yeah, could be, you're right. Thanksgiving is hard for him.
Yeah.
That explains the
story. Maybe he's a diabetic.
It's a holiday drug. I mean, come on. Holiday drug addiction. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That explains it.
Two. Clark is Superman, literally and figuratively.
Yep.
And the whole show is about him not abandoning people and always sticking up for his friends. So, but then Lois turns and says, even though he's always there for everybody at the drop of a hat, including an evil billionaire named Lex Luthor, she's talking about him abandoning people. Again, a betrayal of what we've seen in 5.5 prior seasons of the show.
Yep.
Which makes no sense. So she, too, is ready to abandon everything she knows about this character of Clark Kent. And then three, it's ironic she talks about Lois Lane having 20/20 vision when she clearly has face blindness and cannot recognize her boyfriend, who just happens to be wearing a green hoodie
and
sunglasses. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that when I've seen Esther in sunglasses before, I can still tell it's Esther, even though she's wearing sunglasses. I can recognize Dustin with a beard.
Yeah, you haven't seen her with a hoodie on, though. So you
That's
know.
True. I haven't seen her with a hoodie and sunglasses. That rare combination, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that might be a complete disguise. I mean, I don't know if the writers were trying to be funny there in saying that Lois has 20/20 vision, even though she doesn't know that her future husband is Superman.
Yeah.
And she can't ever recognize that. But that's one of the things I've always hated about Superman is that he doesn't wear a mask, and yet nobody can tell that Clark Kent is Superman, even though he's a hulking giant muscle man who just puts on some glasses.
Yep.
I know that's been a joke in the comics, so I'll forgive it. But in this show, context of this show.
He also puts the curl down or up or right. I mean, you know, he does a couple things.
True. So yeah.
He comes your hair curl slightly differently and then wear glasses. It's totally different.
Yeah.
That's what go ahead.
Go ahead. So I think this was part of your point number two, but in this scene and in a few other scenes in this particular episode, that bothered me as well, that the female characters in this show are pictured as being so flighty and tempestuous, and they give up on their whatever their ethical standards are so quickly. Like you said, that she's seen Clark's behavior. She should know better. But at a drop of a hat, she's ready to forget everything she knows about him and just say, oh, never mind. But their flightiness and their tempestuousness from one second to the next is I find that very irritating. And I'm not going to necessarily say that it's sexist. It is sexist because they only write the females that way. But I think it alludes a little bit more to the comic book-ism of the characters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. It really does. And it speaks to we just hadn't gotten that far yet in the way we wrote our female characters, even in the comics. So this is that same era, I think. It might have been earlier 2000s when there's kind of an evolution in going on the way they wrote comics, especially around women, because there was this concept known as fridging a character, a woman, a female. It's called, usually referred to as for a female character, where the female character's demise or plight is really the only purpose for that is to drive forward the male character's display of their abilities or their heroism. It's not that the female character has a plot of her own for her to get out of her own dilemma. It's that she is driving the male's journey. And this comes from Green Lantern. So Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner in the comics, his girlfriend, for anybody who hasn't read late 90s, early 2000s Green Lantern, spoiler alert, his girlfriend gets murdered by a supervillain and basically torn apart and stuffed in a fridge. And he discovers this when he comes home one day, and it drives his story forward. And a lot of people are angry because this was his girlfriend was a popular character. She had powers of her own. Her name was Jade, and she had her own power set, and she was a badass in her own right. But yet she gets murdered and literally fridged. And it became a big scandal on the internet back in the day, and became known as fridging a woman. And this is exactly what we're seeing here, is that the woman, her plight really drives toward the heroism or the evilness of the darker characters.
Yeah.
So it's, they are merely hinges upon which the men turn or center themselves, I guess, if that makes sense.
I guess at least after, you know, obviously this is an older show, starts in the early aughts, 2001, I think. But I guess at least for them, once Michael Rosenbaum said, I've had enough of this, they did at least replace his character with a female lead. It was the evil female lead there, and it made her more of a main character. This is still in the earlier season, so, you know, again, I'm not excusing the activity, but at least it evolved somewhat over the years, and maybe, I don't know, maybe some of that influence actually helped, I don't know, some of that backlash.
I mean, Smallville definitely does not pass the Bechdel test. I mean, whatever you think of Joss Whedon these days, at least one thing he did right was with Buffy. You know, he made a character that was pretty much independent of men. She was driving her own story forward. And so that was nice to see. So on one hand, you had Buffy and Whedon's way of delivering universe versus Smallville, which was more fridging characters. So sometimes not literally fridging, but definitely emotionally fridging this character.
No, I guess the CW did do Birds of Prey, and they did have Charmed at the time. So they did have some female strong leads also.
They did.
This show didn't tap into that.
Yeah, this particular, yeah.
Yes, that is true.
It is an issue. Of course, you know, hindsight is 20/20, even in writing. But you know, you're right. In this case, it was annoying that these women didn't stand on their own, in their own stories. I mean,
really the only strong one, oddly enough, looking back now, is probably Alyssa Mack over the years. She seemed to kind of be more of the independent lead in, you know, even in the early years, but Lana was definitely just a prop to move along Clark the whole time, or to move Lex along the whole time. She really had no purpose other than that.
And looking for that strength in Lois's character, I was kind of hoping for that in Lois's character that I saw in Chloe's character, just even in this one episode, because I had remembered Lois being that way a little bit more from the old movies and stuff, but it was lacking so much in the character written in this series, and that disappointed me, quite frankly.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, they always talk about her being, you know, this badass character, but everything she does, is revolves around Clark. And I mean, Erica Durance wasn't bad, but it was not the best written Lois I've ever seen, for sure. I'd be interested, like, maybe someday we can go back and do Lois and Clark, the old Terry Hatcher, Dean Cain show, and see how that, you know, stands in contrast to Smallville and see what the relationship was there. Because she's always supposed to be this badass character, but she's, again, even in the old, the 50s TV show, Superman TV show, I mean, Lois was kind of just a driving plot for Superman in general, for him to come in and rescue and save the day.
Yeah, true.
You know, they've talked about doing just a Lois Lane TV series in the past. I think that would be an interesting experiment. You know, but I think she's written much better in the comics, but they've also had a lot more time to evolve.
So, yeah, true.
Over the years. So the B plot is, I guess, or it's probably more like a D plot, is Lana getting pregnant by Lex. We go into that's where we get the doctor's office with no lights except the X-ray machine.
I guess that's important for the overall like season arc or something, but for this particular episode, it wasn't very important.
Yeah,
important at all in this particular episode, really.
And even less important was Chloe. I mean, Allison Mack's character in this, and I felt like this was becoming more and more true, having watched the show from the beginning up until whenever I quit. But she was becoming less and less relevant to the show, even though her character was so popular in the original run of Smallville, the early seasons, that they wrote her character into the comics. She had not been a character in the comics prior to Smallville existing. And so they wrote her character because she was so popular, which was cool. Mm-hmm. But I felt like they made her character less and less useful over time. In this case, she's an information funnel. And really, that's all she does is she can do a few mouse clicks, a little tippy-tappy on the keyboard, and she could find out where everything comes from in the internet.
True.
Yes.
Which was annoying, because that's a frequent trope, I would say, in sci-fi shows, is we've always got the information funnel character, and this is really bad in the modern Arrowverse.
Oh, yeah.
Is we've got, what's her name? That in Arrow, with the glasses. Can't remember her name all of a sudden.
Oh, I can't either.
she's the Chloe Sullivan of the Arrowverse.
Yeah.
And she's an information funnel. We had the guy in the first couple seasons of Supergirl that he was the elite hacksaw that was the information funnel. This constant trope of having...
Yeah, the dude in Flash.
the guy in Flash, yeah. So we've always got this information funnel character. But that's basically Chloe Sullivan, she became a X-Files type investigator in the beginning of the show, which was cool. She was a Scully.
Yep.
And then she was worn down more and more to me, it felt like, and she just became just a transitionary character. Like, she was a way to get from point A to point B without having to really do much investigation. True. She could just tippy tap on the keyboard. And even so, I remember the last season I watched, didn't she get some like super hacker powers? Like,
she got some kind of superpower at some point. Yeah, it was Felicity from Arrow, by the way.
Felicity, yes. but yeah, she got some super hacker powers in later seasons, and I think that's about when I stopped watching. Was she got super stupid. She basically became the human internet at that point, which was just ridiculous.
True.
But they definitely minimized her impact. And she was supposed to be like, everybody thought for a long time that maybe Chloe is actually Lois Lane, and she has a name change at some point to protect her identity. But that never happened. Chloe became her own character because she was Lois before Lois Lane.
Right.
She was a reporter. She was a Scully. She was an investigative reporter for the high school newspaper. She was writing X-Files level reports for a high school newspaper.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And that, as someone kind of walking into the show, Chloe's character and what she was accomplishing, I was expecting Lois to have those qualities and be doing those activities instead. I didn't understand the need for Chloe's character to even be there. So it's kind of like they divided Lois into two characters or something. But anyways.
Yeah, I think the original intent was they probably were never going to bring Lois Lane in.
Yeah, I don't think they were.
I mean, originally there was going to be no flying. They definitely got into flying. There were going to be no tights, but we got multiple characters with tights.
Woohoo!
yeah, we had Aquaman, we had Cyborg, we had Arrow, Green Arrow.
We had
Flash at one point.
Yeah.
They were all in tights.
Want tights. Yeah. Want tights.
If you got the buns, show them.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just they violated their own standards at almost every point.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially once you get past like season 3-ish. Yeah, I don't know. They really betrayed themselves on a lot of fronts, and I think Chloe would have been a cool character. If she had been like killed off and been an inspiration for Lois, maybe they were cousins. Maybe they were cousins in the show. I can't remember. But that would have been cool. She inspired, you know, Lois to have the reporting career.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
I mean, obviously the character is not the person that's in the sex cult, but I noticed that even on Supergirl, they made references to Chloe in a couple episodes and stuff like that. So it's like she's still in the universe in general, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. I think she's still an inspirational character. They just definitely wasted her on the show.
Yeah, sure.
There's not really the F plot in the show is the creep plot between Lionel Luthor and Martha Kent.
Oh yeah.
I remember his dad dying. I don't remember when that was. I guess it was fairly recently before this. I don't remember why it happened either.
I don't either. I think if it follows comics canon, he almost always has a heart attack and dies.
Okay.
It just depends on the circumstances that induce that heart attack.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I feel like he was maybe in the barn doing something and he just had a random heart attack, but I don't really remember.
Might be right. It's as good as anything I'll come up with.
Yeah, I mean... Not having John Schneider around was a loss for the show. He was definitely a good part of the show. John Schneider, he was Bo Duke from Dukes of Hazzard back in the day. And I don't know why they felt they had to kill him off. He was a great character. He was a grounding character for Clark to really bring in that farm, all shucks, farm boy type culture to the show.
Yep.
And, you know, shows you why Clark Kent is such an esteemable character, right? He's a pillar of society, and it's because of his dad. And he was a great character, John Schneider was a really good actor himself.
I was going to say he was good for the show. Yeah.
And so he dies and somehow Lionel Luthor, Lex Luthor, him and Ma Kent start to have a relationship and she becomes a senator at some point.
Oh yeah. I remember
in later
that.
Seasons.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I didn't understand that relationship then. And I even understand it even less now because their two characters just don't make sense.
The Luthers just have a thing for these women of Smallville that they just can't get over, apparently. That's an ongoing theme in this show.
Apparently, yeah. And to me, I didn't think Annette O'Toole and John Glover, they didn't really have that great chemistry altogether.
No.
I don't see like what would have motivated the writers to bring them together other than just to do something to do it with those characters.
I guess. And Annette O'Toole was always kind of just neutral to me. She wouldn't add a lot, but she didn't take away. You know, she wasn't like bad like Clark is, but she wasn't like great like, I don't know, the Lex character or John Glover tend to be. Lionel, I guess, if we're gonna stay consistent. But yeah, and like I guess they needed something for her to do, maybe, since You know, Bo Duke was dead. They had to do something with her.
Yeah, something intriguing. And you notice, though, it wasn't just, he wasn't just swooping in on her, though. He felt something, and then he apologized. He tried to leave the situation and leave the room, and he literally did, you know, try to exit. But she then came after him and said that she wanted to start something. So she was going after him even more than he was going after her.
Which, if you want to speak to consistency, it makes no sense, because if I know in the earlier seasons, I don't remember the specifics, but Lionel's whole goal was to figure out everything about Clark and expose his powers and everything. And now all of a sudden his mother's like, let me hook up with that guy.
Yeah.
I've been screwing with my son for 4 or 5 years. It's just really weird to me.
Yeah, I really didn't like that plot development once I watched that. And I'm like, I don't like this at all. This is not a great look on Ma Kent.
No.
And to me, it's just like, well, maybe Lionel's just got an evil plot, you know, up his sleeve. But I really didn't get that impression that they were driving it. He's manipulating Ma Kent somehow. It was just,
nope.
It was an honest to goodness, bad idea romance. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where it goes after this, and I'm not going to ever find out, but I hope they didn't preserve that storyline for very long.
You know, you're going to keep binging it, Mark. Come on.
Yeah. I do know she ends up going to Topeka or whatever the capital of Kansas is and becomes a state senator or something like that. So she's not around very much in the later seasons.
Yeah.
And Clark pretty much has the house to himself, even though he lives in Metropolis.
yeah. Well, I mean, he can go anywhere in 2 seconds. So.
Yeah, he can.
It doesn't matter where he lives, really.
He's only, you can see Metropolis from the watchtower.
Yeah, true.
From the water tower. So.
You can keep an eye on the big city crime from Smallville from there. Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to note one thing before we just, I mean, we're almost to the end of this, to Thanksgiving Day. But I do want to note one of the funny recurring themes that I had totally forgotten about with the show was that Clark Kent, no matter where he goes, he doesn't ever bother to use a telephone. He doesn't ever bother to knock on a door. He just strolls in casually to whatever building, whoever's house it is. He does home invasions, legit home invasions.
You talk about
anywhere he wants to go.
Like Lex's mansion when he just walks in.
Yes. He just walks into the mansion. He just walks into the Arrow Efficiency. Yeah. He just walks into Lois's apartment. He never knocks.
And it made more sense. Like, it still doesn't make sense. We're great friends, but I don't just walk into your apartment either.
Yes.
So even, that doesn't even make sense. But it makes even less sense the fact that him and Lex hate each other, but he still just fucking walks into his mansion.
It's not like it's a place of business. He just strolls in.
Yep.
That's true. He did do that. I noticed that Lois did that at his house, even though they're family friends, but it confused me. I was like, wait, what's going on? But now that I think back, yeah, he did that in all of those scenes. He just strolled right in.
He just walks right in, yeah. I mean, if he really is the good Kansan farm boy that he's supposed to be, he would, you know, be a little more mannered about it.
It makes sense on the Daily Planet when you're visiting Chloe, but sure. Other than that, it makes no sense.
Yeah, it's very rude of him to do, to just show up. Give at least a courtesy knock or something.
Exactly.
He's got shades of Homelander from The Boys.
Exactly.
I mean, I get it. You're a little egomaniacal, so you wouldn't knock. But yeah. This guy's supposed to be a...
And what,
you know,
are you going to do, lock
good.
The door on him? I mean...
But. Yeah, exactly. I get that. But come on.
Right.
Clark would knock. A real Clark would knock. Not just stroll in.
Agreed.
I mean, I get you don't want to waste time, because every freaking episode of this show completes the plot A in about 25 minutes and leaves the final 15 for an extended wrap-up of every episode. But come on.
Right.
Okay. Did you guys notice in the scene where Chloe and Clark go to the lab to talk to the doctor, and that's when they discover that the lab has been ransacked and the doctor is there dead on the ground, that their reaction is basically, there's no reaction. There's no more than a raised eyebrow. Clark just checks their pulse and he's like, she's dead. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of the reaction.
Yeah.
Then they just go on with their conversation. There's no raised voices. There's no. They're like, well, what else is going on? Da 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 da. And I'm like, wait, there's a freaking dead body on the ground. Yeah. Aren't you gonna like express something, or you know?
There's no calling cops. There's no.
There's no nothing.
Clark's seen a lot of dead bodies. He doesn't.
Yeah.
I know.
It's old hat. Like,
it is so old hat. They're just so calm. It's like, you know, like they're feeding bread to ducks that day or something. It's just.
True.
It's just, they are disturbingly calm.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like, she's dead. Meh.
True.
You know,
they've seen a lot of tragedy in their lives. So, yeah, another dead body is old hat at this point.
It is.
I, I always looked at the, you know, like Tom Welling, I know this is his first acting job, but to me, he's like a big St. Bernard. I mean, the dude is literally like 6'5", yeah. So he's a giant human being. But he always, he's got those big puppy dog eyes, and he's just kind of a fluffy actor.
As we can see over your shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, as you can see my permanent wallpaper. But yeah, he's just kind of a big old St. Bernard, and, you know, reactions just weren't the strong suit of this show. They didn't write a lot of extreme reactions to anything in the show.
True, yeah.
Or rarely, I should say.
I feel like that, yeah, I feel like that would have been out of his comfort zone. I don't know if he could.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Then lastly, we finally get to the Thanksgiving plot of this episode, and all these people are having Thanksgiving at the Clark Kent farm, including Lionel Luthor showing up. Instead of eating with his own family, he's having Thanksgiving with Annette O'Toole, as well as Lois Lane, and I think Chloe is there.
Yeah.
And another really, really stupid scene in the show is Clark acts like they have this special tradition.
Hang on, before that, we'll get to that audio in a second. But before that, we also have the really bad, you know, we're talking about quote unquote witty banter in this show. This is the apology from Oliver for all his excessive drug use that he did over the last 25 minutes.
Happy Turkey Day.
Where you been? I've been worried about you.
Yeah, listen, that's all over now. I'm like a walking drug-free zone, honest.
So if I were to hug you right now, I wouldn't stab myself on any stray needles?
Over here.
I always gotta have the touching music at the end.
Oh my gosh.
Because drug users, they just have stray needles sticking out all over their body when you hug them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awkward. Okay, come here, you billionaire needle dick. Get over here.
Yeah, witty banter, witty banter.
Surprised there wasn't a more you know over them or something at the end. Like, I'm a walking drug-free zone.
Little Nancy Reagan head pops up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is your billionaire on drugs.
But anyway, yes, to your point at the very end, one of the stupidest parts of the entire episode.
Yeah, so Clark, he declares that the Kents have this tradition going back to Kent several generations ago of telling what they're thankful for on Thanksgiving. Yeah, Clark, that's pretty much what every family, many families have across America, is telling what they're thankful for. And then...
That's like the most standard thing that people do.
Yeah.
He's like, my Thanksgiving, we have turkey and stuffing. I don't know if y'all know about this tradition.
We have sides and bread. And then I don't know if you guys, I'm assuming you guys noticed that he's the only one who says what they're thankful for.
Oh, yeah.
And then the rest of the episode, he just stares creepily at everybody. Nobody else is thankful for anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's up with that?
We have the audio of that, too.
If I could have everyone's attention, please. I'd like to make a little announcement. Our family has a tradition. It goes back way before I was even born. Where everyone takes a moment to say what they're most thankful for in their lives. I would just like to say that I'm most thankful for my mom and dad.
Crickets.
Whose faith in me taught me to have faith in myself. Thank you.
And anyone else? Anybody else want to say anything? How about now? Shut the fuck up, Clark. Let's eat now. Of course. Of course. Wasn't that the end of the first episode? The very first episode?
I feel like that was the end of every episode.
Swallowed should have been the song.
They would always end in the barn in all the early seasons, and I feel like that song kicked on about half the time.
Yeah, he would always end in the barn, staring off towards Metropolis and staring off into the distance. Sometimes Lana was up there, but it was always in the barn. This was like... Basically, every episode of the show ends with a terrible song. The terrible song at the end about reflecting. It's all about reflecting on what just happened.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, I just felt bad for Clark in that instance because nobody else said what they're thankful for. They just all stared at him and then slowly Let's see. Yay, Clark.
Yay, he's thankful for his mom and dad. Yay.
He's like, I'm thankful. But
yeah, if I were him, I just said I would have flipped everybody the bird and walked out, taking the turkey with me.
You should have just speed ran out of there, take all the
Grandpa Kent's carving knife and get the fuck out of here. Yeah, like fuck you, everybody else. And then the last thing is just Lana and Lex having dinner at a giant table, like straight out of Batman in 1989 when Vicki Vale and Bruce Wayne are having dinner in that dining hall or whatever.
Can you pass?
Basically
salt?
That.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you forgot where in between that, where Chloe opens up her flip phone at the table and sees a text message from Jimmy or somebody.
Jimmy Olsen. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Which same. I think was Sean Ashmore, I think was in, which who was most recently in The Boys. It was either Aaron Ashmore or Sean Ashmore.
I think you're right. Yeah.
They're twins. So who can really tell them apart?
Yeah. Impossible.
Yeah, but he was Jimmy Olsen for a while on that show. I think if I remember right.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
So yeah, I forgot Jimmy Olsen was in the show.
They brought everybody in eventually. I mean, they had 10 seasons to fill, Mark. You had to get all the characters in there.
10 seasons, 215 episodes. That's insane.
It's too bad they didn't bring in Fat Martian Manhunter from the 1997 Justice League.
Yes, that would have been great. Bring back David Ogden Steers as Martian Manhunter.
Exactly, yeah.
Does Smallville have any persons of color?
They did, and that guy
had to leave with a drug issue, but
yeah, and a sex tape issue. Yeah,
yeah.
He Sam played Jones. Pete in the show.
Yeah,
Sam
Pete.
Jones.
Yeah,
Sam Jones III. Yeah, he got in some legal trouble, ended up going to jail for 10 months.
Yeah,
and he also had a sex tape come out right before that as well. So, but he was, I think he was the only person of color on the show, if I remember right.
Kristen Kirk is,
I guess she is Eurasian.
Yeah.
So I guess she is, yes, a person of color, but
there's stuff in the fun facts about backlash for both of them, by the way, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Cause fanboys love to be racist.
Yeah. That's what fanboys do these days, apparently.
Yep.
I only was just kind of thinking, cause as I watched this episode towards the end, I thought, you know, I think that episode was 100% white people. And I was just wondering like, what was that whole series like? But
it wasn't the most diverse in general.
No,
for sure.
Like much of TV of the era.
Yeah, true. It was diverse. Like Friends was diverse.
Yeah. I mean, Kristen Kreuk was mixed race enough for executive producers to be comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
She was a bit Asian.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. And thus endeth Rage, the season 6 episode of Giving Thanks about Smallville.
That was about 5 minutes worth of actual Thanksgiving anything. It was kind of the running theme, but really had not much to do with anything. Except for Clark's film speech at the end.
I'm not sure we shouldn't have found something else to watch, but I'm thankful that we did nonetheless.
Oh, there's so much to talk about with this show, though.
And I guess we'll do that when we carve up our turkey of fun facts right after this.
Remember, Harry, it's Marion's first holiday turkey. Not a word if it's dry.
It's her first turkey.
It won't be juicy.
What they don't know is Marion's first turkey is America's first turkey, Butterball. It's always juicy because it's specially deep-basted, so every slice is moist and tender.
Mmm, juicy turkey, Marion.
I knew it would be.
After all, it's Butterball, also available fresh.
We're Beatrice.
This is the Nintendo video game system. It plays only cartridge games. This is the new Atari XE system. It plays cartridge and disc-based games. Disc drive sold separately, and only Atari comes with a real joystick. Both have guns, but only Atari comes with the target game Bug Hunt. Nintendo has a toy robot, but only Atari gives you a keyboard for playing advanced computer games. It even comes with the amazing Flight Simulator 2 cartridge. The new Atari XE video game system. Unbeatable.
There's a new way to have turkey this Thanksgiving.
Ooh.
It comes stuffed full of good things. It's boneless, so it's easy to carve. And it's made out of ice cream. Introducing the Thanksgiving Turkey Ice Cream Cake from Carvel. Buy one now and get four little gobblers for only $4 more. buy a turkey cake and get four little gobblers for $4.
Zeke! Zeke! Happy Thanksgiving from the Weird Al Show!
Ooh!
Thanks, CBS Kids! Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Nobody beats the Wiz. Nobody beats the Wiz.
Everybody's rushing to the Wiz Unbeatable Thanksgiving Super Sale. Nobody beats the Wiz on this Sharp half-pipe microwave oven, unreal at $99. On this Brother Electric typewriter with case, unstoppable at $99. On this Codaphone beeperless remote telephone answering machine, unmatchable at $88.
Nobody beats the Wiz. Nobody
the Unbeatable Thanksgiving Wiz. Super Sale now at all 11 Wiz stores.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
The NBC Thanksgiving Comedy Weekend starts tonight. First, join the Cosby family for a comedy feast.
That's not a turkey. That's a cabbage.
Followed by a different world.
Would you love it?
Then on Cheers.
You can't spend your life dressed up like Mark Twain.
Why not? He did.
And Hill Street's Bruce White's in Mama's Boy tonight.
All right, well, let's carve up a turkey of fun facts here. IMDb gives Smallville 8.1 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes 75%, Metacritic 7.3 out of 10, Google 83%, which is low for Google, and Amazon 4.5 out of 5, and TV.com 8.9 out of 10.
And just note, this is all for this particular season. Since Smallville was a big enough show, sometimes we can't do that, some of the random shit we pick, but this is a big enough show that, yeah, these were all for this specific season.
I see Esther's also changed her background to something more Superman proper.
Yes, I have.
A little Chris Reeve action.
Yes, you're welcome.
All right, so Annette O'Toole, thanks to KryptonSite, who we used to... So back in the day, Dustin and I used to have our own little entertainment website.
We had a couple.
Did pretty well. We had a couple. And we used to have this relationship with a site called KryptonSite, and they were like the most hardcore fan site I think I've ever seen that was dedicated exclusively to Smallville. And this guy, Craig, that used to, I guess, still does run the site. He reports on more than just Smallville now, but
yeah, I looked on there. It looks like they're covering like the whole Arrowverse and all that stuff, yeah. Which makes sense for what they're doing.
But thanks to him, we were able to pull a lot of fun facts about this particular episode together.
Yeah.
Annette O'Toole, who plays Lana Lang in this, I'm sorry, she plays Clark Martha Kent in this, played Lana Lang in
exactly.
Superman 3.
Yeah.
She said about this episode, it was fun. It was one of those parties where you invite people together who never in a million years would be together, and it makes for such a fun party. I wish that we'd gone into the Thanksgiving dinner and seen what these people were talking about. If you're going to have them there, then let's have some fireworks. Let's see. Well, what about it? Why did this happen? I'll drink some wine and get a little loose. That would have been great. And I agree.
Yeah.
An episode that was just Thanksgiving dinner between all these people who seem to hate each other.
Exactly.
Like, that would have been a fun episode.
I agree.
Like, it could have been a bit of a bottle episode. You know, save a little money on effects and make it just a drama episode. Make it like a soap opera or something. That would have been fun.
Yep.
Like, why is Lionel Luther really here? Why are you here getting in my mom's pants and trying?
Right.
Like, my dad just had a heart attack and died like 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, what are you doing over here?
And Ma Kent, why are you getting all horny for Lionel Luther? His son is evil and you know it. You know he's a shyster. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
That would have been
and
fun.
And he's a shyster too. Yes.
Yeah. We did mention that maybe John Glover is quite the creep in real life. Apparently there was a bit of a joke he said towards future sex cult leader Allison Mack. He did say about the episode, we had a wonderful time shooting it. You should have seen Justin messing with Erica, Justin Hartley being Arrow and Erica Durance being Lois Lane. He was so ornery with her. He just keeping her off guard, pulling the rug out from under all the time. We were doing a lot of improv and just talking about the Brussels sprouts. And then I said, Miss Sullivan, how much longer are you going to be jailbait? Glover laughs. Allison just looked at me and Annette laughed. It was a lot of fun.
Isn't that fun?
What?
Talking about
isn't
jailbait.
That
isn't that fun?
Yeah, isn't that fun to be jailbait? Yeah. Oh, underage sexual assault.
Yeah.
What a fun topic.
At least it was aimed at a future sex cult leader, so.
True.
Yeah.
Couldn't have no a better sex cult leader.
Yeah.
Rosenbaum did talk about on the he's, I guess, known to be quite the prankster. On the very first day of shooting the first episode, the pilot of the show, they had to perform this rescue scene where Rosenbaum is trapped in a car accident and he's drowning. And Clark pulls him out, saves his life, and that's when they first become friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosenbaum said, Tom Welling had to give me mouth-to-mouth. It's the first day of shooting, and there's no way. He's looking at me. He's serious, and I'm serious. Imagine me lying on the ground, and he's about to give me mouth-to-mouth. And I'm like, do it. Come on, Clark. Rosenbaum says he then decided to wag his tongue, I guess like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, saying fava beans. It's a miracle anyone got the work done, with the facetious Mr. Rosenbaum always ready to crack up his co-stars.
What?
Yeah, weird line.
Yeah.
I guess at the end of the show, after they left the show in 2008, which would have been season eight, I guess, of the show.
Yeah, I guess so.
So Millar and Goh, who created the show, they left the show and decided to go do other stuff, including, as we mentioned, Into the Badlands. But they did decide they were going to turn around and sue Warner Brothers because of the way they were, I guess, reselling the show. They didn't feel like they were getting all the fees that they should have in reselling the show into syndication. And they filed a suit in 2010, but eventually in 2013, they did reach a settlement that they were originally asking for $100 million in compensation, but they didn't end up.
Is this show worth $100 million? I just wonder how much it is in general. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe I'm lowering expectations.
I don't know. I mean, syndication, at least now, I mean, back in 2010, 2013, syndication is not the market it used to be like it was back in
the day. But the fact, I mean, it's like on Hulu. I'm sure they cut some deal there to get on there and probably got paid something. You know, I don't know. I don't know what those run, but $100 million still seems high. But I don't know.
I mean, it wasn't on streaming for a long time. It was one of those holdouts where so many of those shows, you know, really made a name for themselves on early streaming.
Yeah, true.
Smallville did not.
You know, like Breaking Bad and stuff like that, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we did talk about how fanboys are a problem. We've seen this with Wonder Woman. We've seen it with Captain Marvel. We've seen it with Star Wars. You know, the thing that makes me mad about fanboys is back in the 70s and 80s, fanboys used to be a welcoming, all-inclusive culture because they were the cast-outs, you know, of culture.
Nerds.
And so they welcomed
the
nerds. Yeah, the nerds. Yeah. They welcomed people who looked different, were different, were not the norm necessarily. And somehow fanboyism has become this toxic culture, mm-hmm. and Smallville was no stranger to that. It really makes me sad. It makes me angry because that's not the type of culture I grew up with as a young nerd myself. But it's become really, really toxic. And they were really mad because in the comics, Lana Lang, including Annette O'Toole herself, was a redheaded character. And they decided they were going to make this, you know, an Asian actress, give the role to an Asian actress. Mm-hmm. And they made Pete Ross, who was this, I believe he had blonde hair, was a like generic white kid.
Generic blonde white kid. Yeah.
And they made him a black kid, a black guy in the show. And so people were really, really upset about that. But they didn't, you know, they didn't stop them from casting these actors and continuing that in the show.
Yep.
Although it never got like to the level of like the Arrowverse is doing, casting transgender actors.
Yeah, sure.
You know, changing up roles, swapping sexes on some of them. Like, they've gone way beyond the pale, and to a point where, of course, fanboys are even more upset about that now, about being even more progressive.
Yeah, and I think you do have to put it a little bit in the box, though, too, from, you know, how progressive is it? Well, you know, I mean, this is, like they mentioned, or like we talked about, there was no superhero anything on when Smallville started. So for them to out of the box change anything to try to get any traction, I give them, you know, at least a little bit of credit for that. I'm sure they could have done more as they went along. But, you know, I'm sure they were also concerned about things getting embraced and getting the first superhero show off the ground and all that stuff. And they still went ahead and bucked against some of that anyway, which I guess I'm glad they did that at least.
Yeah. And to their credit, they tried. I mean, it wasn't where we are now, but now they're continuing to make strides forward. But still, toxic fandom persists.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh, well, yeah. And everything's much more readily available now, you know. Yeah. No Twitter really back then or anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can, to Dustin's point, I can understand exactly what he's saying, because maybe a fanboy, a person is truly a fan of that comic, and they like one of these B-side characters a lot, and for the first time here's their chance to see it personified with an actual actor, and then the producers have decided to make this change and, you know, kind of rewrite the character in human form. I could understand how that would kind of upset you, like, oh man, they finally made it a TV version, but they, you know, rewrote who this character is, and I was so excited to finally see it personified. Mm-hmm. I could understand how that would feel like a disappointment. I could understand that chain of thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I, you know, personally, I think it would be interesting to see, like, if they were to cast Superman as a black man, right? But I would also grant you that would change the story of Superman in some ways, because a a black person, a black man living in small town rural America has a very different experience than a generic white guy.
Oh, yeah.
If he's an alien, a generic white guy growing up in rural America has a much more privileged center that a black person would not have.
Sure.
As much as I would like to see that have, I could see not wanting to recast that from a racial perspective because it really would logically greatly change the story. Not that that story shouldn't be told, because I think it should. But I could see where that's more of a landmark shift than changing a B character.
And I think if you did that, I think they should do kind of like what Marvel did. I mean, I'm not super familiar outside of Inside the Spider-Verse with the original Peter Parker, Miles Morales changes. But, you know, Miles Morales' origin story, you know, they cast someone, a person of color opposed to a white guy, and they change the origin story to a totally different, unique starting point. I think that could also help, you know, with Superman. Maybe it doesn't have to be Smallville, Kansas again. Maybe you could do something different. I don't know exactly what you do, but I think you could do that if maybe, and we've seen the Smallville, Kansas thing a billion times, just like we've seen the uncle get killed a billion times with Peter Parker, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's good just to change that shit up anyway, just to have mm-hmm. something new. So, yeah, I know what you mean. If you did the exact same story, it might be a little weird, but they could definitely make it work if they changed up a few other things.
Yeah, I think, you know, with DC having this alternate reality situation in the movies and they did it. They did have a black Superman in the comics in Infinite Crisis or Crisis on Infinite Earths. There was a black Superman from a parallel Earth,
right? Yeah,
and a black, and there was a black Wonder Woman also, which, you know, is, but they came from a different world. Now, that would still be a cool story to see if it's a parallel world and see how Superman's story would change as a black person or a person of color. That would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, these like Pete Ross, I mean, not that he's not like some landmark character in DC Comics, you know? It's like, I mean, come on.
Lana was, but yeah, Pete Ross was not. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was originally Jensen Ackles, who was from Richardson, Texas here, which those not from Dallas, it's like 15 minutes away from where I am now. Originally he was up for the role of Clark Kent, but he obviously didn't get it. Although he did show up as in season 4 as I think he was a gym coach or a high school coach.
He had something to do with Smallville High. Yeah. When you thought the show was making all this progress, I remember we talked about this specifically, and then all of a sudden we get to season 4. And now it's like, oh, Clark wants to be the star quarterback again. What the hell happened here? We're developing the storyline. Never back to high school. Yeah.
And Clark's like 26 years old. And he wants to. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I think he was involved with Lana and, anyways, he was in season 4. He was contracted for season 5, but then Supernatural started getting more popular and taking way more of his time. Yeah. So he was cut from Smallville. So I don't remember what his problem. He was some sort of kryptonite powered monster, I remember.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was either. Yeah.
Yeah, another bad season. That might have been the Witch season. I don't remember.
Might have been.
It was a dark period of Smallville.
Yeah.
Speaking of Supernatural, there originally was a plan to do a crossover with Supernatural where in the Supernatural world, which they've done some things kind of in this space before, where they take on some of the fictional characters, but they were going to make it where all the previous actors who played Superman, I guess, were being murdered by some supernatural manner, and they go track down Tom Welling, who is playing the role of Clark Kent on Smallville. So they would have entered the Smallville set trying to keep him from getting killed, which could have been a fun episode.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that episode never happened.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cool meta idea there.
Yeah. And that's one good thing, Supernatural. I'd never finished watching it, and they just finally wrapped up their series the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I didn't go past like season 7 or 8, but they were really good about the meta stuff, about doing funny meta jokes like that, which were fun. Supernatural is a fun show to watch for Monster of the Week type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned also, they did originally have a policy of no flights, no tights, but they violated that left and right. We never did get up until the very last shot, I guess, of the show. He was never in a Superman suit, Tom Welling. Mm-hmm. And then they finally decided, I guess they were going to bring in the chess piece from from Superman Returns. And they put him in that. And I guess I never saw the last episode. Did he just rip open his shirt and there's the Brandon Routh Superman chess piece?
Yeah, it's the picture at the top of the notes if you want to see it. But I could have sworn you went and watched the finale too. That's the only thing I watched after the first 6 or 7 seasons.
No, I never did watch it. Oh, okay. I still haven't to this day.
Yeah.
I tried to get back into it at one point and rewatch the seasons I'd missed, but I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that. The finale is actually not that bad, if I remember right. But again, the beginning and ending of seasons, it's the one thing that they could do. But yeah, I thought it was so cheap, the fact that They couldn't even make like a custom suit for Tom Welling. They had to use Brandon Routh's old suit from the old movie, like 4 or 5 years beforehand. Like,
oh my god,
you really can't make a costume. It doesn't seem that expensive, but whatever.
Well, interesting. I mean, Tom Welling does claim that he was, before they cast Brandon Routh, that he was supposed to be the character for the Superman Returns movie.
Yeah,
but that Smallville, his contractual obligations to Smallville kept him from doing.
There's a note about that later in here. I think you'll.
Is there? Yeah. Okay. Okay, and yeah, we did also mention that they never did have Batman and Wonder Woman in the show. They are alluded to, but we did have just about every other character.
I just wanted to point out, they kind of explained why they didn't do the tights. It kind of goes back to what we talked about before again, we've said a few times, that Smallville was the first superhero thing to launch. And they said, Gal Millar basically said they didn't want to bring what they considered the nerdy outfits into the show because they want it to be more casual, cool for the generic watcher to maybe kind of ease them into a superhero story and not get so hit with superhero stuff right off the beginning or right off the bat. So that kind of makes sense in the early seasons. I think later they definitely, like they did lax, they could have relaxed that even more, but I guess I kind of understand that in 2001 that they wanted to, again, try to get the audience at least started on it. And I just automatically think, because, you know, there were no big budget comic book movies or anything at that time. It was kind of a dead zone. So,
well, they had Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man had come out in 2001, 2002. It was kind of a bit of a barren landscape for superheroes at that time.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that they waited until the very, very last episode to pull out the costume.
Yeah, I agree.
Apparently, Tom Welling was very adamantly against doing it. He did not want to put on the tights.
Yeah, he wasn't a fan of it. No.
Yeah.
But you're Superman, so, you know, just get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
You're one of the few actors to put on such an iconic costume. I mean, just roll with it. Just go with it.
Yep.
They did have Aquaman, though. He definitely wore tights. They had Cyborg. They had Flash. They had Martian Manhunter, as we talked about. There were definitely, as we talked about, a lot of tights in there.
Yep.
Wasn't all no flights, no tights.
Is Martian Manhunter a black guy in the comics, or did they just happen to cast?
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
He always is. Okay, I didn't know that, actually. Okay.
I think that's, I mean, I know he is in the most recent incarnation, I believe.
Okay, I just knew Supergirl and this both cast him as a black person. I just didn't know if that was, they were both doing a change, or if that was just consistent.
Now, they were supposed to have Bruce Wayne at some point. They thought one of the characters was going to be Bruce Wayne when he goes off on his year one journey. I don't know if you remember, it was like season two or three. They thought it was going to be Bruce Wayne, but it never was. Mm-hmm. They do make some allusions to Diana Prince and Bruce Wayne, though, at some point. Chloe does mention a billionaire with high-tech toys and a wondrous woman in season 10, mm-hmm. but they are never seen in the show. And you can also apparently see Batman's cowl and cape in one of the, I guess, one of the visions of the future in the last season. As the world is destroyed by Cassandra, or by Lex Luthor, and Cassandra Carver's horrific visions of the future. It's a hard name to say. Apparently, they did want to do also a young Bruce Wayne like Smallville, but that never happened because of Batman Begins. Although they did come back along and do that with Gotham on Fox, you know, which actually is not a bad show.
Yeah. They said, I didn't put it all here, but they said actually that was the original pitch for Smallville was to be young Bruce Wayne. And then Batman Begins was coming out, they're like, okay, how about Superman? They're like, okay, we're not doing a Superman movie. But then they ended up doing a Superman movie anyway a few years later. But
Smallville did win some Emmys. They won 3 Primetime Emmy Awards for sound editing in 2002, 2006, and 2008. Not the acting.
Not the acting, not the witty banter.
Yeah,
exactly.
You couldn't even get it for special effects.
Witty banter award,
Sound editing. We did mention that apparently Welling did meet with Brett Ratner and it said that scheduling got in the way of him becoming Superman in Batman Returns. As Dustin noted here, his note specifically was, we sat down, he held a shrimp cocktail and masturbated.
It's Brett Ratner.
Which, if you don't know, Brett Ratner was one of the Me Too perpetrators. Was he the one that masturbated into a potted plant?
No, he held a shrimp cocktail, and it was in front of Olivia Munn.
Okay, maybe that was why. Oh, that's right. It was Olivia Munn. Yeah. That's right. Held a shrimp cocktail and masturbated.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally forgot about it. I always want to funnel that into Harvey Weinstein. I forgot about Ratner. I always want to funnel other actions into Harvey Weinstein.
I think Weinstein was the potted plant.
Another show I was on with you guys, you were arguing about if it was Richard Gere and a hamster or something and somebody else. You were trying to figure out. You guys are always trying to sort out some kind of sex gossip.
What we do.
What's our tagline? Sorting out sex gossip.
We're owned by TMZ.
And recapping Ray Combs' death. That's what the...
Yes, again with Ray Combs. I love Ray Combs, though.
R.I.P.
Oh, yeah.
Fun fact about Justin Hartley. Apparently, he decided to announce his divorce, that he was divorcing his wife by text message. His previous wife, Chrishell Staus, that's a weird name.
Yeah.
He texted her to tell her that he was divorced and that he had filed against her. Well, I guess he was in season three of This Is Us. In 45 minutes after that, somehow the rest of the world knew that they were getting divorced. I guess TMZ. Whoa. I guess he texted TMZ or something.
No.
Yep. Listed irreconcilable differences as the reason for the split. She said she had no idea it was coming and talked to him after and said, if that's what you really wanted, there are better ways to go about it. she thought it was a joke at first, but he really didn't want to talk to her again after that.
That's terrible.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
she's apparently on that Sunset show on Netflix. I guess it's one of their popular shows right now. I don't know.
Not familiar with that. Sam Jones, who did play Pete Ross, he pretty much disappeared after like season two or three. He was Clark Kent's best bud growing up, and he pretty much disappeared. Well, Sam Jones had quite a few legal problems of his own. He was arrested for with a conspiracy to, I guess, a conspiracy to distribute illegal drugs. Oh, intent to distribute in 2010. He pled guilty, went to prison. He only served 10 months, and he also had a sex tape come out, which I guess we'll be covering that in our other podcast.
That's our sex scandal podcast.
All right. Well, where are they now? We always like to talk about this. Tom Welling, after Smallville, his first project was called Parkland, which was a movie that covered the day that JFK was assassinated.
Which is the day of this recording, actually. So
the day is the day of this recording. Yep. We always like to, as Esther demanded, to record a...
on JFK's assassination.
Record an episode on the day that JFK is assassinated. Yep. She requests that every year.
We could have recorded it from the actual spot, you guys.
That's true. We could have gone to Dealey Plaza. That's true. But we're trying to socially distance. And if you've ever been down to Dealey Plaza, the whack jobs down there do not like to socially distance.
That's true.
He was also in the Kevin Costner NFL movie Draft Day and two seasons of Lucifer, where he played Kane of Kane and Abel. He also showed up as Clark Kent in the Arrowverse crossover event Crisis on Infinite Earths, reprising, I think he was a Clark Kent that had given up his powers, right?
Yeah, he was, yep.
Which, if you haven't watched it, too bad, that show came out like
exactly.
Yeah. So you should have watched it by now. Michael Rosenbaum went on to star in two seasons of TV Land's and Pastor, Martin X in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and he has now a pretty good podcast called Inside of You. I listen to episodes here and there, the ones I'm interested in. He's pretty good for a podcast.
Yep. Way better than us.
Yes. Kristen
That's
Kruk.
Not possible, you guys.
Kristen Kruk was in CW's Beauty and the Beast and is currently in the CBC legal drama Burden of Truth. You just completely failed to mention she was in the Street Fighter movie, Chun-Li.
Yeah, that's true. But that was during Smallville. This was post-Smallville.
Was it? Oh, okay. I thought that came out.
It was 2009, apparently.
Oh, okay. And finally, whatever happened to Allison Mack? It was about this time when this episode came out where she had just started. I think she had just visited Nexium for the first time and met Keith Raniere. And apparently, I don't know if you had it in these notes here. She had a blog post and she had a video, right, in season 7 that talked about how you should come to her website where they discuss things like philosophy and things
like
that.
Yeah, they had it on the Amazon season 6. They had a video promoting season 7 and she promoted her blog and was talking about how she has some really cool philosophical discussions on that blog. And then they had the web archive version of some of her Raniere stuff. I'll let Mark, who always reads everything, go through that. But I guess people who don't know what Nexium is, you know, it was basically this self-help, multi-level marketing thing that went completely awry when the leader turned out to be a total perv who basically wanted to create a whole dominatrix movement from a whole bunch of women. It got a lot of these actresses involved. It was Nikki Klein from Battlestar. Indian Oxenberg, Claire Brofman, who was like the Seagram's heiress. She pretty much funded the whole thing. And he basically sold, it was him and this other woman, what's her name, Mark? Do you remember the Nancy Salzman?
I can't remember. That's it.
Nancy Salzman. Yeah. The two of them.
I always call her eyebrows.
Yeah. They basically put together this whole training thing to basically break you down and completely think that everything you've ever thought was wrong, that's wrong for you to have thought that, and basically get over it. And he ended up having all these women branded. Allison Mack was one of the leaders of this thing. She was a first level person among, and a couple other people, I don't remember. She was the most notable though. Indian Oxenberg was underneath her. And yeah, they basically would put Keith Raniere's initials on these women and brand them. And yeah, it's a whole brainwash cult deal. There's two different documentaries that are pretty interesting on it. There's The Vow on HBO, and then there's Seduced on Stars, which is actually, I think, even better than The Vow on HBO. It's India Oxenberg's perspective. But both of those are really good if you want to know more about it. But I will say, watching the first episode of The Vow, I'm like, this seems kind of understandable why people would like this, you know, it's the way that they pitch it. But yeah, it's so crazy that you could spend hours and hours researching this thing.
Yes. I just finished The Vow, and I'd already seen other documentaries about it too. It is fascinating, and I've invested at least 12 hours of my life watching things about that. But a lot of these listeners probably know already, but Keith Raniere has been you know, he's been given 120 years, a life sentence, basically. Claire Bronfman was, she was given 81 months. And Allison Mack, our lovely Miss Allison Mack, she's still currently awaiting sentencing. So that's TBD. But she was in it really deep. So it really is an unknown thing right now. I'm curious to find out.
I think she can get up to 40 years, is what they said. I think that's the possibility right now. So, yeah, we'll see.
A real possibility. She was in it really deep and responsible for a lot of bad things.
Yep.
Yeah, she was charged with racketeering. That's what she's waiting sentences on, is racketeering charges. I think we watched one episode of Seduced, so we haven't watched the other four yet, but I'll be interested to see what kind of details they get into. But Nikki Klein is still, like, she is one of the faithful that has not left. Like, they go outside and they apparently do dances for Keith Raniere outside of his prison.
Oh, yeah.
Where he can see them, and she's one of the, I think they said there's 50 to 80 people that are still hardcore faithful to Keith Raniere.
Apparently a bunch of them have threatened the prosecutors in the case and like sent stuff to their offices and showed up and harassed them and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when Nikki Klein started just like, I was a big Battlestar fan, and she was such a vital character, like a pretty high profile character early on, a B-level character. And she just slowly disappeared. And finally they wrote her off the show, but I was like, what happened to Nikki Klein? And then here, this is exactly what happened. She got wrapped up in the Nexium, just like Allison Mack, and went down.
Kristen Crook was part of it for a while. And you know, she bailed out. She wasn't part of any of the branding stuff or anything like that. And then there was somebody else on Battlestar that was part of it too. I can't remember her name now, but yeah, they went and got a few people that were celebrities. They liked the celebrity if they could reel them in.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand what the Seagram's sisters what they saw in this whole thing to blow through their whole fortune. But I mean, I guess he did that. In fairness, he got a bunch of people in Mexico on board, a bunch of powerful families down there. And yeah, he was convincing. He got the Dalai Lama to visit. I know they paid him, but he still came. You know, gave him some credibility there. It was quite the scheme.
I mean, if you watch Allison Mack in those interviews, she was desperate. I don't know if she didn't get enough fatherly attention growing up. I mean, she never mentions being abused. I don't know if she was abused, but she was desperately seeking Susan. Obviously, she was thirsty for something to give her life some value.
I think the snippet from the blog, if you read that, it gives you a little bit of insight into that too. It's kind of crazy.
Okay, so speaking of, here's a snippet from her blog. I'll do a dramatic reading. The final day of filming on Smallville felt so strange. Strange in that it was no different than any other day. There was no special send-off, no signs, no fireworks, just a box of pictures, a few cards, and a closed trailer door. The end of 10 years was so simple, unassuming. But after packing my bags, turning over the keys to my loft, and boarding a plane for NYC, Albany, I accepted the finality of it all. It was truly done. What now? I expressed this concern, this incredible feeling of loss and lack of direction, to a dear friend and mentor of mine, Keith Raniere. He asked if I'd ever thought about taking a little time away from acting to see what I would find.
He inquired about times in my life when I did not work, times when I didn't attach myself to the title of Allison Mack, actress, and it was just plain simple me. So I decided to take Keith's advice and give myself some time to build the character of me. The actual me. I had no idea what this would entail, but I wanted to give it a shot. A sense of self sounded like a good thing, and normally if I were a good actress, I wouldn't stumble over these lines. I could definitely use some of that. It turns out Keith asked me to look at one area of my life I felt most insecure.
Oh, did he?
I felt as though I had ripped the very foundation out from under myself and felt paralyzed. Where was I supposed to go from here? Years of transforming the nods of approval that used to come from behind the camera into nods of love and affirmation. I grew up like an Olympic gymnast looking for her scorecards, and it's a 10. The crowd goes wild. She has permission to continue to exist, which is exactly why I now want to prove to myself that I'm alive without the applause. I am worthy without the curtain call. I want to trust I am still here without an audience.
Oh my goodness.
And scene.
See, the thing that I really wanted to know from that, though, is even in this blog post, you see the Keith Raniere manipulation of, oh, let's look at that thing that makes you feel insecure and dig into that and swap your feelings on that. Like, I don't know. It's so rampant. And it's the same methodology over and over again. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a predator.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Absolutely. Okay. 2006 in pop culture. 1 gallon of gas was $3.03 on average. It is $2.60 today, thanks to COVID and hopefully green technologies making their way to the forefront. Average cost of a new house was $266,000. It is almost double that today at $423,000. Mm. Average monthly rent, I did not get, but it is $1,400 today. I forgot to get that one. Average salary was $37,900. And I find this hard to believe, but allegedly the average salary today is $74,000.
So they say.
That's average. That's not median. That's average. Yeah. So I find that hard to believe. But I looked multiple sources, and that's what it said. Minimum wage was $5.15. It is only $7.25 today, unless you're in Florida, where they just got a raise to $15 an hour, which is more proper. Florida, of all places.
Yeah.
Movie ticket average was $6.04. It is $9.26 today. And the cost of a Super Bowl ad was $2.5 million, and it is $6 million today. The top five films of 2006 were The Da Vinci Code, The X-Men Last Stand, Cars, Night at the Museum, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I never saw any of the Pirates of the Caribbean past the first one because I was so beaten by
this. Yes, agreed. Same here.
The top song of the year was Irreplaceable by Baywatch. Google buys YouTube, which had only been around since 2005, so this was 2006. They bought YouTube for $1.65 billion in stock. Whatever happened to either of those
websites? Yeah, who knows? They'll never find them today.
Yeah.
The 1 billionth song is purchased from iTunes, and it was The Speed of Sound by Coldplay.
Oh, wow.
At least it wasn't like Baby Shark.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Of the day. The Baby Shark of the day.
Good point.
Who was the schmuck? Who was the schmuck that bought it? I want to know.
His name was Dustin.
Yeah, I know.
The Nintendo Wii is released, as are Blu-ray discs. Neil deGrasse Tyson cuts the head off the planet Pluto, saying it is no longer a planet. And I think that still holds true to this day. Facebook opens up registration to anyone with a valid email address, and we see the tons of positive things that's done in this world.
Social media is great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just great. Yeah. NSYNC member Lance Bass reveals that he's gay. It's pretty much an open secret. Everybody pretty much knows that. Vice President Dick Cheney, we were still in the Bush era in 2006. VP Dick Cheney shoots a GOP donor in the face over the weekend during a quail hunt.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Turned around and shot him in the face.
The good old days.
The good old days of just shooting people in the face.
Remember when that used to be the craziest political thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The good old days.
My question is, what did that donor know about the rigged election of 2020?
True, good point.
What secret key holder? The feud between game show host Donald Trump and Rosie O'Donnell begins after he refuses to fire Miss USA winner Tara Conner after she is caught drinking underage, using cocaine, and making out with fellow contestant Katie Blair at a New York nightclub. Trump said that, dude, this is, well, what a coincidence. Trump said the dude is brother's alcoholism death. He is a big believer in second chances. Boy, is he to this day.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court rules that playmate Anna Nicole Smith can have access to her late husband's J. Howard Marshall's fortune after the will was contested. And keep in mind, This is definitely a winter summer romance, to say the least. Yeah. He was 96 years old when he passed, and she was, I think, in her late 20s.
Although, oddly enough, she barely lived past what he did, so.
She did, yeah. Yeah, that same year. So I read also that the same year she had her second child, and then her first child, her son, ended up dying in the hospital where she had the kid. He died in the room in her maternity recovery, died of a drug overdose. Wow. So. Steve Irwin is murdered by a stingray. And so I have to ask, what did Steve Irwin know about the rigged election of 2020?
It's a fake news death.
Yes. And finally, noted anti-Semite Mel Gibson is arrested for a DUI and goes on a racist tirade during his arrest. During that arrest, he apparently arrested the deputy whether or not he was a Jew and said, "Effing Jews, the Jews are responsible for all the worlds in the world."
Too bad we didn't have Thomas. That's my Mel. Yeah.
That's my Mel Gibson impression. Yeah. That's my Australian accent.
That's good enough.
Yet somehow he's got his acting career all back and going. It's no problem.
Oh, he sure does. Yeah. 2006 in television. As we mentioned, the WB and UPN merged to form the CW. Actually, Justin Hartley got himself another superhero job this year after he becomes the star of the Aquaman pilot, which was also written by Goen Millar. And this was not a Smallville spinoff, even though they said that they had plans to do a crossover with Smallville, even though they had already had an Aquaman on the show, and even though Justin Hartley was already Oliver Queen on Smallville.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yes, that pilot did not go forward.
We do still need to find that pilot, though.
We do. That pilot did not go forward because it happened because of the CW merger. They didn't want to go forward with the pilot, but it did become a bit of a cult hit.
iTunes. Yeah, the CW wouldn't want to have like a shitload of superhero shows be the only thing that supports them.
Yeah, why would they want to do that? That's pretty much all they do now.
Yeah.
It's all vampire shows and superhero shows now on CW. Stargate SG-1 is canceled after the broadcast. After the broadcast of its 200th episode. Stargate SG-1. Broadcast of its 200th episode. It becomes the longest broadcast sci-fi series in American TV history. Although I guess maybe Smallville surpassed it with 215 episodes.
Yeah, true. 217, right? I think it was.
215, 217, yeah. Katie Couric becomes the first female solo anchor of the CBS Evening News. John O'Hurley, who is Jay Peterman from Seinfeld, replaces Richard Karn as the host of Family Feud, which was also at one point hosted by Ray Combs.
There it is.
Doesn't
make the reference. We knew it was coming.
I always have to get it in somehow. Bob Barker announces his retirement from The Price is Right after 35 years on the air. And I didn't know this. He's still alive today. He is 96 years old.
I didn't realize he retired that long ago. Drew Carey's been holding that down for a while, I guess.
Yeah. That's pretty much all Drew Carey does now.
Yeah.
And
it still makes me sad, though, that Bob Barker isn't hosting it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's been a long time and the man can't live forever, but that man is that show to me still.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's one of these.
How do you watch Jeopardy going forward, you know?
Yeah.
Right. And Bob Barker with his long, skinny microphone.
Yeah. Which I think Drew Carey still uses that same mic.
Yeah, I think so.
No,
does he not?
I thought he did. Maybe not.
I don't think he does. I think he doesn't use the same microphone. He's not allowed to or something like that.
Okay. I'll be fair. It's been a long time since I've seen Price is Right in any form, but.
Yeah.
But Drew Carey did bring the male model onto the show.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
And that's cool.
Yeah.
That was overdue.
Instead of just sexually harassing the female models like Bob Barker did.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah, I do remember like growing up, like our weather days, bad weather days, or sick days. That was one thing I'd always do. 10 a.m., fire up Price is Right on CBS.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
One thing I did every day.
Yep.
Definitely.
One
more thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that Bob Barker realized how many sick kids he was entertaining every day?
That's a good question. I would be interested to know that. Yeah. I loved Price is Right. That was a must watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And finally, on a sort of sad note, after 30 years of sports casting for ABC Sports, Al Michaels is traded to NBC Universal from Disney for the rights to one of Disney's first cartoon characters, Oswald the Rabbit? I've never heard of that character.
Yeah.
They didn't really do much with that, did they?
No, they did. They did not.
The only Oswald we know is Lee Harvey Oswald on JFK Assassination Day.
Right, exactly.
Maybe it was Lee Harvey Oswald the Rabbit.
Yes. And his little bunny book depository.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's an animated kid's book of the whole story of the assassination.
The carrot depository.
God. The carrot depository.
All right. The top rated shows of 2006, CSI Miami, Desperate Housewives, House, Grey's Anatomy, which is still somehow on
and
the air.
And number one in their to slot. This day.
And number one. CSI, Dancing with the Stars, which is somehow still on, American Idol Tuesday, and American Idol Wednesday was the number one show.
Those were individual, I guess, depending on the day, but
yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Well, it's like the NFL, they're, you know.
Yeah,
it's
Thursday night or Sunday, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Shows premiering in 2006, Hannah Montana, God. Dexter, which is making a comeback pretty soon. Oh, man. Hannah Montana. So, like, what's your name from Schitt's Creek?
Moira Rose,
from
yeah.
Schitt's Creek. Yeah. Hannah Montana.
Does baby like Hannah Montana?
The John Mulaney Show, the first John Mulaney Show on Comedy Central.
I didn't know
Central.
That existed.
I didn't either. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, Ugly Betty, 30 Rock, and Top Chef. Shows ending in 2006, Arrested Development, which of course came back in 2013, and David Cross just said this past week it is dead for all intents and purposes.
It should be. Okay.
Soul Train finally ended in 2006. Justice League Unlimited, which Michael Rosenbaum was also in as Flash. Malcolm in the Middle, that 70s show. Will and Grace, which also came back in recent years. Charmed, which also just came back in recent years. Alias, which I'm surprised hasn't come back in recent years. Deadwood, which had a comeback movie, which I still haven't seen. I need to see. Reading But Rainbow, which made a comeback in recent years. And finally, Dustin's favorite show, Beef, the series.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
Beef?
Beef.
It's what's for dinner.
Should we still get Beef remade?
Yeah, do you want to see Smallville remade? No, but I would like to see Beef, the series remade. Beef, the re-beefening.
Exactly. The re-beefening.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on Smallville Rage? And I don't think we can ask if you want to see this remade, because guess what? Superman's never going to go.
Exactly.
Superman is going to be remade ad infinitum.
Yeah, I'd like to see, sure. I'd like to see some more updated versions of it with more persons of color and a little bit more updated ethics and morals, maybe, but you know, that's just me.
Yeah. You know, going back and watching this, it reminded me of everything that I didn't like about a mid-season episode. Like we said, it's better than a lot of things we've watched recently. It was at least watchable. It was at least, I don't know. It wasn't painful to watch like a lot of things have been recently that we've picked, you know, see BJ and the Bear, which was, could barely get through. You know, and I'm sure part of that was nostalgia and remembering all this stuff and being like, oh, it's kind of fun to revisit. But I also think the quality was a little bit better than some of these things we've seen. That being said, it had a lot, you know, it lacked a lot. It was very 2006 in a lot of ways.
Very.
And, you know, the costuming wasn't great. The one costume we got, that was a really bad Green Arrow costume. The acting from everybody but Tom Welling really wasn't, I know you specify certain people, even Justin Hartley wasn't that bad. You know, like,
no,
he was fine. And I think Lois is, Erica Durant seemed like a good actress if she had better material. Like, I don't know, everybody seemed okay. It was a little, the storyline was a little weak, obviously. The Thanksgiving tie-in was beyond weak.
yeah.
And, you know, failed speech and all. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's a show that it's okay if you unfortunately have a few qualifiers of, you know, it's of the time a little bit, and which is not as bad as some things of the time that we've definitely seen on this show that are very much like, oh, okay, this is very problematic even to see now. See, you know, Heil Honey, I'm Home or something like that. But in any case, it's okay. It's kind of it's a show that probably would belong if they still had those like CW or like KTVT Channel 11 before it was CBS. If you had one of those stations that had like an afternoon to fill and you wanted to throw reruns on, I could see Smallville fitting in that and being fine or something like that. But, definitely don't have any desire to go back and rewatch everything or anything like that. Yeah, and as far as a remake, the concept of, you know, young Superman probably could be redone, like Esther said, with a little more updated versions of it all. And I really think it'd be nice to have, like, some kind of alternative story if you're going to do it again. Like I said, I'm so tired of the same Bruce Wayne's parents get killed and Uncle Ben gets killed and, like, all this same stuff over and over again. If they could do a whole new thing with it, I think it could be interesting. But I would not want to see this particular thing get remade.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think they tried it again with Gotham, and from what I've seen of Gotham, I like it, like, 80% of it. Except that's young Bruce Wayne. Of course, we finally found out how Batman came to be and what motivated him to become a superhero. Finally! We never got that story. I think they've kind of had a spiritual reboot of that, even though it wasn't Superman. I don't know. I'm kind of tired of Superman as a character, to be honest with you. I've been tired of him for a long time, so I would like to see Superman go away for, I don't know, 20 years or so.
And yes, I'm with you on that. Like, I've always been annoyed with Superman for the fact that really all he has is kryptonite and then sometimes doesn't even have that. So, you know, that's kind of why I like The Boys. It's kind of a reimagining of this idea in a totally different way. It's an evil guy doing all evil things with all his evil cohorts. You know, at least it's a totally different twist on the concept of a Superman character. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm just saying if we were going to remake it, I'd want it to be totally different. But, I'm kind of tired of Superman, too.
Mm-hmm. I think a Lois Lane series would be fun about, you know, a totally human reporter that is coming of age or becoming a reporter in this age of, you know, these gods that walk among us. That could be interesting, right? And all the side effects of that, the crime that spills out of it, all those kinds of things. That could be fun. But young Superman itself, don't really have much interest. Honestly, I don't really want to ever see it again. And I think there's more interesting characters to tackle, much more flawed characters. But yeah, I mean, The Boys is a good spin on it to see what you could do if they take that God mentality to heart.
Yeah.
And yeah, try to wreck everybody's lives. but yeah, that's pretty much it. If anybody has anything else, I think that pretty much puts a bow on Rage. And we did note, by the way, that there are no ill, like, when you come down from this drug, there were no ill side effects. Like, there's no recovery time from this drug that he was given.
Right.
You just stop using it and you're okay. There's no recovery time. No AA meetings for all of them. No time in the hospital vomiting and sweating.
Cool, calm as a cucumber. He looked great. And she had no questions about it. She's like, okay, well, come on in. Have a Thanksgiving. Yep.
No concerns.
No needles. Okay, come on in.
Forgiveness. Yeah. Surprise, I'm having an affair with Chris Farley. Yep. All right, well, we also don't have any needles that are just sitting around waiting to stab people, so I guess that puts a bow on yet another very special episode of The Pilot Project. The Pilot Project is produced by Mark Hudson and Dustin Taylor. Email us at pilotprojectpod@gmail.com or find us on social channels as @pilotprojectpod. Links to subscribe to this show for free and links to the TV shows we watch can be found in this episode's show notes or on our website at pilotprojectpod.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Pilot Project.
I'm loving this show.
We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next episode.